You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy.
My name's actually Felix.
The weird, the whack, the wonderful.
Stranger Than Fact on 95BFM.
In November of 2000, a number of time travel enthusiasts were chatting on a message board. Within the thread, people were speculating about the realities of time travel and the possible outcomes of a paradox. It's here that a regular user named Paul suggested that paradoxes were self-correcting, that making changes in the past simply started a new timeline, rather than directly changing the future. It was this comment that caught the attention of a new user named TimeTravel_0. He claimed that Paul's theory was spot on. He would know, after all, since he had recently arrived from the year 2036. Immediately, other forum users were skeptical. Of course they were. This forum had previously existed solely for thought experiments, speculation, hypothetical scenarios. Never had one of their users actually claimed to be a time traveler, and all of a sudden, this guy rocks up with what he says is a fully functioning time machine. So they start asking questions. What's it like in the future? How does time travel work? Who invented it? Throughout numerous posts on the forum, TimeTravel_0, later revealing his full name to be John Titor, made several claims about the future, that in 2004 the United States would begin to slip into a civil war, which would erupt into nationwide violence by 2008, and ultimately culminate in a full-scale nuclear World War III in 2015. He claimed that his time machine operated via changes in gravity that manipulated relativity to travel backwards through time, and that the machines were invented by CERN, the European Organization for Nuclear Research, in 2034. For those who don't know, CERN is an existing organization that's best known for its Large Hadron Collider, and for serving as the testing grounds for what would become the World Wide Web. So if anyone's going to invent time travel, it's probably them. John Titor was a pilot, not an engineer, so he wasn't able to flesh out the details, but even still, he seemed to be saying all the right things. Skepticism soon turned to reluctant belief, and reluctant belief soon turned into reverence. His claims about time travel seemed plausible, at least to a group of sci-fi enthusiasts, and everything followed a consistent internal logic. If it was a lie, it was a damn good one, and any potential holes in his predictions could be covered by the excuse that he was from a different timeline. Since appearing within this forum thread, John Titor has become a bit of a time-traveling legend. There's something about the specificity of his claims that makes them compelling, even though his predictions fell completely flat. In fact, even years after John Titor was confirmed to be a hoax, people still believe it. So the question is, why? To answer this question, I sat down with honorary senior lecturer Robert Bartholomew, an expert on supernatural beliefs, to discuss why these hoaxes find such a comfortable home online.
Well, here's the thing. When you talk about the internet, there's so much misinformation out there and so little critical thinking that many people go on to the internet not searching for information, but instead searching for confirmation and affirmation of their pre-existing beliefs. In psychology, that's known as confirmation bias, the tendency to seek out information that reinforces pre-existing beliefs, biases, and stereotypes. And so it's no surprise to me that the internet is a major incubator of rumors and conspiracies out there, because literally you get what you want. People see what they want to see. If I am a white supremacist, I can find some white supremacist sites out there, and it can look like they're all over the place, when in fact it's just a tiny portion of the internet.
Robert notes that this loop of belief persists because of confirmation bias, the consistent desire to reinforce existing beliefs, often to the detriment of truth, and this is something that the internet is very good at doing. At least over recent years, many of the largest platforms online have developed via an evolving algorithm that charts the user's tastes and suggests content that aligns with their values. In that sense, the internet acts as a spider's web. Once you start to read up on a particular topic, like time travel, you're introduced to more and more information relating to that topic, whether or not it's true. However, this doesn't answer what is arguably the more important question here, which is, how do people get themselves into this loop in the first place? What is it about these fringe topics that gets so many people to make that first leap? Robert suggests that it's because these ideas play into a natural spiritual impulse.
In a sense, it fills a similar function as religion. And that's the power there. And if you look at the power of the UFO symbol, or the power of the Bigfoot symbol, or the symbol of ghosts, you know, science essentially says ghosts don't exist. Science says that Bigfoot doesn't exist, and there's no evidence for aliens visiting Earth, even though they may be in the universe. But Farmer Joe down the road claims to have been abducted by an alien, and Mary Jones 2 miles on the other side claims to have seen Bigfoot. And in that sense, Bigfoot and alien abduction claims are anti-scientific symbols in an increasingly secular age. I went to school with Farmer Jones. He claims to have seen Bigfoot, and Mary Jones down the road claims to have been abducted by an alien. Yet science says that that's not true. And if they got that wrong, maybe they got religion wrong as well. I do think there's a religious element to all of this as well.
Do you think there's sort of an inherent human desire to attach things to spirituality?
I think human beings are very fallible and very susceptible. You know, we're very imperfect at hearing, at seeing, and we're very susceptible to seeing things that aren't there, hearing things that aren't there, and believing experiences that people claim to have had when there's no supporting scientific evidence. When you go back to 1938, October 30th, the famous War of the Worlds radio panic in the United States, when that happened at 8 o'clock, at the studios of WABC in New York City, broadcast on 171 stations across the US and Canada, it was described that there were these Martians on these giant tripods, and they were firing heat rays and poison gas. Up to 2 million people believed this for a short period of time based on that radio play. Well, people actually called police during the broadcast, choking, coughing, saying that they could smell the poison gas. People said that they could actually feel the heat rays. And other people called police to say in the distance they could see the giant Martians on their machines. Human beings do not take information in like a video cassette recorder. We interpret information as we take it in.
Here, Robert makes an important point about human fallibility. When presented with information, we have particular biases, particularly when it comes to scientific information versus anecdotal evidence. Seeing a video online of a stranger claiming he was abducted by aliens is absurd, but if it's someone we know personally and they earnestly confide in us that they think they encountered aliens, we're significantly more likely to believe them. For a lot of people, especially those who are inclined to distrust technology or modern science, anecdotal evidence is immediately more convincing. This is why communities form around these ideas. They spread socially. We see circles forming around all sorts of ideologies, whether it's Bigfoot hunters or anti-vaxxers. So in the case of an online hoax like John Titor, where do we find that social element? I believe there's a reason why these hoaxes seem to appear on message boards. These are pre-existing online communities and, like in the case for John Titor, these people are already rallied around a particular theme. For John Titor, that was a community of time travel enthusiasts, but it could be a community of horror fans or health experts or a group of men that are frustrated by their lack of sexual success. These are all pre-existing communities that would-be hoaxers can infiltrate. And since the members of these communities already feel safe, it's easy to access that sense of community without much pushback. Even if you've never talked to that particular user before, if you're part of the same shared community, there's an inherent level of trust. Once you've got that trust, then it's easy to shift people into that loop of confirmation bias we were talking about earlier. As Robert notes, once you start believing in something, it becomes very easy to find proof.
There is a tendency to go to message boards, and I wonder if it's because these people are easier to fool or if they're more willing to believe.
That sounds about right. I mean, if you want to see a UFO, I mean, there are UFOs or objects in the sky people can't identify, technically a UFO, but it doesn't mean it's an extraterrestrial spaceship. And, you know, all one has to do to become part of one of the greatest mysteries in the history of the world, that we may have been visited by extraterrestrial beings, is to go out at night and look up into the sky in your backyard. And if you look long enough and hard enough, you'll see some kind of object in the sky you can't identify.
And so it goes that people begin to identify self-confirming proof that emboldens their belief. And this continues because, at the end of the day, everybody wants to believe in something.
I think it's as simple as people want to believe. Often hoaxes are not so much hoaxes, they're these urban myths that develop and morph and change, a combination of rumors and myths. And people typically believe them, right? They get sucked in. But why UFOs? And it's the same, you can ask the same question for why, you know, Bigfoot or the Chupacabra or the Loch Ness Monster. And I think people want to believe. There's a power with UFOs, because if you take it to its logical conclusion, if there are space aliens and they visit us and they share their technology, they could raise us to the immortal realm of the gods in terms of making us immortal, right? What is it Arthur C. Clarke said? Any civilization advanced enough to traverse the great distances of space and visit Earth, their technology would be indistinguishable from magic.
This doesn't just apply to UFOs either. These otherworldly beliefs hold a certain promise. It introduces a sense of discovery that humanity has largely lacked since we landed on the moon in the 60s, and once again this brings us back to the importance of community. Working towards a goal with others is exciting, even when it's based on a lie, and people are a lot less likely to question the inaccuracies of a hoax if that hoax also serves as the basis for a number of their relationships. Let's use Bigfoot as an example. This is probably the most famous hoax of all time. So famous that calling it a hoax might actually be controversial. People feel very strongly about Bigfoot, and some have dedicated significant portions of their lives in pursuit of a creature that, by all credible accounts, doesn't exist. I wanted to understand why, in the face of so much evidence, so many believers remained firm.
I think Bigfoot's a good example because a lot of people have dedicated significant time to investigating it. Why is it that people become so determined to verify these sorts of hoaxes?
Well, I've written two books on Bigfoot with my brother, who is a Bigfoot researcher in the United States. And, you know, it's the same with UFO groups and the same with some ghost and paranormal investigation groups and lake monster groups. You often get these rivalries. It seems particularly intense with Bigfoot researchers because everyone wants to be the one to find Bigfoot. And they have like their little area that they research in, and they keep things hidden, and they don't want other groups to know about it. And, you know, it's part of the human condition, I guess, that they want to be the ones to get credit for finding Bigfoot and proving it and become world famous.
That sense of rivalry stuck out to me. The community around Bigfoot has become so large that believers have splintered into various groups with their own rivalries and alliances. That revelation got me thinking. If this is the logical escalation of hoax communities, then how do you de-escalate? The Bigfoot community is notable because it has so far outgrown the original hoax that, at this point, they're barely related. These people believe there's something out there, and no matter how much you debunk that inciting moment, that original hoax, they've gone through that loop of confirmation bias so many times that it doesn't matter anymore. you reach a point where people are so convinced of something that the lies between truth and belief no longer exist. It just is. Now, obviously, this is an extreme example, and most hoaxes will never reach this level of fervent belief. In most cases, they simply fade away over time or lose attention once they're debunked, but once in a while, something like Bigfoot will come along and do some lasting damage, only it's not always as innocent as a Sasquatch.
I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
That was Stranger Than Fact on 95BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.